Chapter 29. Fear fractures, burns, and without hesitation, Dooku pulls Aura behind him, even as Neeko steps right into Dark Woman's path, making her come to a sharp halt in the center of the square. "Anya," Neeko says, just as cold as Dark Woman is. "This is a surprise. How is it you were able to track us down to a distant world like Conquered Dawn, and yet you couldn't find the pirates who abducted your Padawan?" Abducted. The word rings hollowly in John's ears, and he swallows, feeling sick. But training. It's training. Dark Woman has tests, real-world tests instead of the kind given in the temple, more useful, more accurate. John was never tested to that degree, managed to be just good enough as a student to earn more manageable tests, but the scarred-over claw marks on his jaw burn like they're fresh again, and John almost puts a hand up to check if they're bleeding, almost steps back. A week on Dormund Kos, Vornskers meant to hunt Force adepts, and it was a good lesson. Useful. John was better at the end of it. But Dark Woman raised him from the time he was an infant. A Padawan from the temple, asked to save herself from a ship full of pirates. That's a harsh test, even for Dark Woman. John barely survived his own trials like that, and he at least knew they were coming. It was just a test, and he closes his eyes for a bare instant, forces them open again. Arla is watching him, all of her attention on him instead of Dark Woman, her eyes narrowed. There's a knife-sharp undercurrent to her, as bright as a blade, and John can't bring himself to meet her gaze. "All that matters," Dark Woman says coolly, "is that my Padawan is safe. Come, girl, we're leaving." It takes effort for John not to flinch at those words, even if they're not directed at him. Deliberately, Neeko shifts back a step, putting his shoulder against Dooku's like a wall in front of Aura. "I think not," he says, and it's mild despite the snap of his fury in the air. Aura is still recovering. Dooku inclines his head, regal, precise. "Indeed," he agrees, "and when Master Fei deems her sufficiently recovered, she will be returning to Coruscant with me. I will take her as my student, since it seems your care is lax enough to put her in danger, Anya." "Do not call me that." Dark Woman's eyes narrow, displeased, and she finally shifts her gaze, landing on John. John swallows, realizes Jaster is still gripping one of his hands, and almost jerks away from him, taking two steps and then bowing low. "Master," he says, and the word is hoarse, barely manages to make it out of his mouth. There's a long, tense pause, and then Dark Woman says, "Boy, I thought you were investigating the fire hands like I told you to." That flat tone makes something lurch in John's stomach, and he swallows, but doesn't raise his head. "I was, Master, but I found a connection to the Death Watch and followed it here." "Here," Dark Woman echoes. "And the intimacy with the current Mandalore is part of your investigation, boy." John's throat feels dry, and the beat of his heart is too quick, too loud in his ears. She's displeased. He knew she would be, that she wouldn't approve, but that edge of cold contempt in her voice is always the hardest thing to bear. John has spent his entire life desperate to keep himself in Dark Woman's good graces, in her favor, and being here, being involved in any of this, that's the opposite of what she would consider his duty. "No, Master," he says, careful. "But I owe him a life debt. He saved me from dying when I was wounded hunting down the Death Watch." "You mean you failed," Dark Woman says, and the sound of her steps approaching makes John tense. "How is it that a student I trained for almost 20 years was given pause by a rabble of Mandalorians? Do you remember nothing that I taught you?" John flinches, drops. He hits his knees in front of Dark Woman, bowing his head, and says, "Forgive me, Master." Dark Woman lets out an irritated breath. "I assume," she says coolly, "that you were the one who informed Master Dooku and Master Dyeth where to find me, boy. Why didn't you calm me in advance?" He could have. John knows that. It would have been a simple thing to warn Dark Woman that Nico and Dooku were coming to meet her. But he hadn't. A betrayal, in some small way, but when John looks at Aura, it's hard to regret that choice, even with the fear beating thick in the back of his throat. "Anya," Dooku says, and there's an edge of irritation in it, sharp enough to make John wince. "Do not call me that," Dark Woman repeats, impatient. "I gave up my name in service of the Force, and that name means nothing to me anymore." Nico scoffs, "And Dark Woman is a better alternative than simply using your old name?" he asks pointedly. "John, stand up." "John," Dark Woman repeats, and John flinches at the weight of her gaze falling on him again. "You're still clinging to that ridiculous name. This is..." "I believe," Jaster says, and the thud of his boots is as loud as John's heartbeat as he approaches, "that you should take a step back, Master Jedi." John tenses, and almost despite himself, he looks up. Jaster is watching Dark Woman, expression steady but cool as he approaches. He comes to a stop a pace away, offering John a hand, and says more quietly, "John, I believe such conversations are best had when the participants are face-to-face. You were just in a fight as well." Swallowing, John weighs his fear against the offer, but Dark Woman already saw him close to Jaster. It's an offered hand, not a declaration of fealty, and John wants to take it. He wants to slip away with Jaster, lock the world out, bury himself in Jaster's warmth, and just hold on. Taking Jaster's hand isn't that, but John wants to. He's been doing his duty, helping, making the galaxy safer. He's been using the skills Dark Woman gave him and keeping people safe. Surely that's enough to allow him this. John closes his eyes for a long moment, then opens them. Reaches up, deliberate, and slides his hand into Jaster's, letting Jaster gently pull him to his feet and back a step. There's a pause, and then Dark Woman folds her arms across her chest. "I see I've failed in my training with multiple students," she says, and John can't help the way he tenses, some part of him ready for her to grab his hair, haul him forward, and shove him back to his knees. "Boy, come here." John wavers, wants to step back, out of the way of her icy stare, but needs to go to her to obey. Refusing will only delay, and she's his master. Even now, she's the one he owes his loyalty to. Except, he owes Jaster his life. He married Jaster, and that comes with bonds of loyalty too. Jedi may not marry, but John knows that much. It happened as it was meant to. His vow when they exchanged vambraces. Words he believes, right down to the core of him. It was the Force that led Jaster to him in that field, and it was the Force that kept John close, protecting Jaster, guarding his path. It's the Force that drew John to the Darksaber, to the plan for a new temple in Mandalorian space, to Jaster again and again. Jaster is a shatterpoint that can't be allowed to break, and it's John's duty to guard him. He is following the will of the Force, just as Dark Woman taught him. That can't be wrong. He breathes in, closes his eyes for a long moment. The fear is still there, beating like a heart, but Jaster is still gripping his hand, warm against the fear's icy hold. He feels like assessment and cunning and a fiery, protective rage, and John breathes it in, lifts his head, opens his eyes again. "Forgive me, Master," he says, quiet. "I swore myself to the Mandalore. The Force drew me to him, and I can't follow your will right now. I'm called to something else." Dark Woman's icy expression doesn't abate. "The Force," she asks, cutting. "Or your own desires, Padawan." John swallows, hesitates. As I thought. Dark Woman takes a step towards him, ignoring the way Jaster's grip tightens, one hand falling towards his thigh holster. You're wavering. Closeness breeds attachment, Padawan. Possessiveness, obsession, the path to the dark side. You cannot be fond of others, even other Jedi. Particularly not those who oppose a Jedi's mission in the galaxy. You've been blinded by your own darkness, your own desires, and I won't have it. Come here. It takes all of John's nerve to meet her gaze without sliding back to his knees, but he tightens his grip on Jaster's hand and manages it, even if it makes him feel shaky, almost sick with tension. Master, it isn't like that. I still follow the Force, but it tells me I need to be here and... He wavers, swallows. I want to be here. I can care for Jaster and not have it be attachment. Any fondness is a path to the dark side, Dark Woman says sharply. We swear ourselves to the Force and nothing should come before that oath. I taught you to be the perfect Jedi, without even a name, without ownership of anything, including yourself. The will of the Force made physical, acting for the good of the galaxy. And now you disregard that. John flinches, but he doesn't let himself step back, keeps his body between Dark Woman and Jaster. I have a name, he says. Quiet, can't manage to raise his voice, but at least he can find the words he's wanted to say since the moment he told Master Yoda what name to register him under as a knight. I chose a name. Foolishness, Dark Woman says dismissively. Too long undercover using it, until it made you as complacent as any foolish Jedi in the Corps, but you know the true path. You can say what you like about the Jedi on Coruscant, Mace says evenly. But I believe you're out of line, Master, if you choose to deny Master Antilles his name. Dark Woman slants him a glance, narrow, but after a long second she snorts and says, Fine, you chose a name, but that doesn't diminish your duty, boy. You serve the Force, not the Mandalore. The easiest way to face Dark Woman is to do what she wants. It's simpler, safer, a habit trained by years in her care. Kneeling, bowing, saying, Yes, Master, no matter what his own feelings say, John's been doing it all his life. Dark Woman is utterly devoted to the Force, an immensely strong and clever Jedi, and John has always wanted to be the same. To have her certainty and her poise, so confident in her path when John wavers and doubts. But he doesn't doubt this path. His care for Jaster is real, but it doesn't cloud his judgment. It gives him strength, if anything, because John knows they'll always pick their duty over each other, their people over their feelings. It's not breaking any oaths to be with Jaster. It's given John a place to rest, even. And if that makes him weak, maybe it does. Maybe John isn't a Jedi like Dark Woman. But right now, looking at Dark Woman and her cold expression and her disdain, looking at Aura and her bruises and the way she's all but hidden herself behind Dooku and Neeko, some part of John is rebelling. He's never resisted before, learned better when he was still a child, but Jaster's hand is warm, wrapped tight around his own, and John feels it like a tremor, shifting in the very earth beneath his feet. Maybe, some small part of him whispers, a corner of him that feels like Jaster's smile, like the gentle touch of hands, or waking with Jaster curled around him, Jango's shoulder against his, or Arla's laughter and quiet companionship, Miles's tired humor and warmth. Maybe, that part of him breathes, one thread of defiance that shines brighter than it has any right to. Maybe if Dark Woman is the sort of Jedi to leave Aura to pirates, maybe if she's the sort of Jedi who's so devoted to the Force that there's no room for anything else, even the basics of being a sentient that are given to everyone else, then maybe John doesn't want to be like her at all. Maybe finding his own path is something better. Terrifying, vaguely, like standing at the edge of a cliff in the dark, but... No Jedi has ever faltered in the face of a fall. I will always serve the Force first of anything, John says, and raises his head, meets Dark Woman's eyes squarely for the first time since he was a child and learned better. No, not better. Learned her preferences, not his own. The thought makes John's mouth feel dry, but he doesn't let himself look away, doesn't waver. I never swore to serve the Mandalore, but I married him, and I care for him. For a bare, fractured instant, there's perfect silence. Then, sharp as the crack of a whip, Dark Woman demands, "You what?" She takes a step forward, hand rising like she's going to grab. Jaster catches her hand, shoves, steps forward as Dark Woman is driven back. He puts himself in front of John, broad and immovable in his black and red armor, one hand on the grip of his blaster. Instantly, Arla falls in behind him, half a step to the side with Django on her left, and John catches Jaster's armor, startled, off balance. "I'll thank you to keep your hands to yourself," Jaster says, just as cold as Dark Woman can be. "If you touch the Mandalore's spouse when it's unwelcome, I believe the punishment is losing your hands entirely. What a shame that would be for a Jedi." Dark Woman scoffs, but she takes a step back, jerking her hand out of Jaster's grip. "You would be so quick to start a conflict with the Jedi Order," she asks. "Padawan, you must see what a warmonger like this thinks of your oaths to the Force. They will last until the moment he wants something, and no longer." John takes a breath, another, then straightens. Arla is tense and angry right beside him, and Jaster is a bulwark, perfectly steady. With their strength around him, all but tangible, it's easy to raise his head and say, "I trust him, Master." He spares a glance at Mace, at Dooku and Neeko, at Aura, and then says, as evenly as he can, "I told Master Dooku and Master Dyeth where you were and that you had a new Padawan. I'm glad I did. Your tests, it's not fair to make Aura face them." Mace takes a breath, sharp, and his eyes narrow as his gaze locks on Dark Woman. "If the girl was taken by pirates, it was through no fault of mine," Dark Woman says flatly. "And if she wasn't able to escape, it's only because she let her fear and her anger overwhelm her. A creature like that isn't fit to be a Jedi." Aura's flinch, the way her hands curl in Dooku's sash, it's familiar, even if John doesn't want to think about why. But he has to, and he can't regret it. Not when he's picked his path, picked Jaster, and everything that comes along with that. "No," John allows, quiet. "Not a Jedi like you, at least. I tried, but I'm not a Jedi like you either, Master, and I will not change that." Dark Woman's mouth thins, and she takes a half step forward towards John as he tenses. "Mandalore has a long history of children as soldiers," Jaster says mildly, "but at the very least, we offer family and love as well. I don't believe your beliefs are compatible with those of the true Mandalorians, Master Jedi. Please remove yourself from Mandalorian space within the day, or I will be forced to take steps." Irritation ticks up into anger, and Dark Woman makes a sound of frustration, then turns on her heel, robe sweeping around her. "Very well," she says shortly, and tells Dooku like a dire warning, "I will be taking this to the Council, Master Dooku." "I am on the Council, Master Kuro, and I will be bringing matters to them as well," Dooku tells her, looking down his nose at her with every bit of arrogance his bearing and height can give him. "Prepare yourself. I have no doubt my old master will have several pressing questions for you in light of recent events." A muscle ticks in Dark Woman's jaw, but she doesn't reply, just stalks towards the landed ships with sharp strides, her fury leaving a wash of prickling anger in the air like an unpleasant ghost. In a moment, there's a hum of engines, a burn of thrusters, and the cold knife's edge of Dark Woman's presence lifts like a shadow from the earth, vanishing entirely from John's range a second later. John breathes in, then out, as steadily as he's able, something in his bones feeling shaky and unmoored, and stumbles. Jaster catches him, pulls him in close and wraps him up in his arms, and John shudders, sinking into it without hesitation. He tucks his face into the curve of Jaster's neck, breathing in the metal and old paper smell of him, and tries to find any words at all, but fails utterly. "It's all right," Jaster says, soft, and he presses his cheek to John's hair, unmoving, unwavering. "You always impress me with your strength, John, no matter the circumstances." John doesn't feel strong right now. All he did was talk back, push around the edges of Dark Woman's beliefs. It wasn't enough to change anything about her or about the past, but a hand curls around his shoulder, gripping tight. Arla leans in, another bulwark blocking out the rest of the galaxy just for a moment, and says, quiet, almost gentle, "I think you just proved that she wasn't right about you." What John told her in the hold on the way back from Gargan's moon, given back to him. John presses a hand over hers, gripping it tightly, and says, hoarse, like he's been talking far too much, "I need to, I'm sorry, but..." Jaster nods and kisses his hair, and the fact that he understands without John actually having to put his need into words is a relief so great it shakes right through John. Not surprising, either, given what happened to Arla and... The commonalities are something John will have to think about later. Much later, after a long morning of meditation to make him feel steadier, a little more grounded, like himself instead of a shaken child with Dark Woman still looming over him. "Would you like my company?" Jaster asks, soft. "Or do you prefer to be alone?" That's the simplest question John has ever had to answer. "Please, stay," he says, and Jaster nods without hesitation. "Miles," he says, "if you wouldn't mind seeing to our guests." "Of course not, Mandalore," Miles says steadily. "Masters, this way. Django, Arla, Countess Wren, if you wouldn't mind answering a few questions about what happened on Harzwi." Arla pulls away, grabbing Django by the collar of his armor. "I guess we can endure it," she says airily. "Django?" "I'm coming," Django promises, then pauses. "I need to tell you and Bwir something later, too." Arla eyes him. "The reason you've been sneaking around?" she asks pointedly. When Django grimaces, she snorts. "All right, as soon as everything's settled, we'll shake it out of you. Countess, we can get your clan registered with House Mareel and see about shifting logistics around to supply you with what you need." "Thank you," Ursa murmurs, casting a worried look at John before she determinedly turns and follows Arla up the path. Nico is a step behind, tugging Mace and Depa along with him, and Dooku turns to follow, only to stop short. The reason why is clear in the quick, almost furtive tug on John's sleeve, and he raises his head, looking into green eyes that are scared but brave, defiant. Aura swallows, then says clearly, "Thank you, Master Antilles, for sending Master Dooku and Master Dyeth after me." John carefully pulls out of Jaster's hold, turns to face her. It's only been a few months, for Aura, of living with Dark Woman, but John knows the full cost of it, and the fact that Aura doesn't have to spend years more with her is a relief rooted deep in his chest. He weighs his words for a moment, then inclines his head. She thinks everyone who doesn't hold to her way of following the Force is a dark thing, or on the edge of falling, John says quietly, and it's a lesson he carried with him for so many, many years. But he's defied all of Dark Woman's lessons, and he still hasn't fallen. Now he has people to rely on, and a place to return to, and help when he's injured, and it's only made him steadier. What was once a deeply dug-in fear has faded, worn away by reality, and that gives John space to meet Aura's eyes and say, "She's wrong. She's wrong about us, and she always will be. We just have to prove that, to her and to ourselves." Aura nods. "I'm going to become a knight," she says, on the edge of fierce. "I don't care what anyone else thinks. I want to be a Jedi, so I'm going to be one." "You will," John says, and Aura leans in, wraps her skinny arms around him, and hugs him tightly. It makes John startle, but after a second, he wraps an arm around her in return, holds on as he breathes. "Padawan sister," he murmurs, and Aura squeezes tightly, then pulls away and smiles. "Padawan brother," she answers, then turns and hurries to catch up with Dooku, who sets a hand on her shoulder with a proud smile and steers her up the path with steady steps. There's a pause, then a light touch, and Jaster slides an arm around John's waist, tugs him in and up against him. When John presses his hands to Jaster's breastplate, Jaster leans up, kisses his forehead, and says, "It's technically still our honeymoon, I believe, even if the majority of our plans were ruined. Would you care to spend the rest of the day in bed with me? I don't think even Miles will begrudge us that." John wants nothing more than to curl up close to Jaster and just be for the rest of time, but he can accept the rest of today as a compromise, given their duties. Without hesitation, he nods, then reaches up, catching Jaster's face with a hand and cupping his cheek. The way Jaster leans into his touch is heady, feels impossible, but Dark Woman was here, and now she's gone, and in the aftermath of facing her down, standing by what he knows is true, John feels as if nothing else in all the universe is truly impossible in this moment. Because of Arla, because of Nico and Jango and Miles, because of Mace and Dooku and Aura, but because of Jaster, most of all, and what he offered when he carried John off that battlefield. When he showed John a kindness he'd never had before, and cared, and gave of himself. It's addictive, that sort of giving, and it makes John want to give back, to stay. He can stay. He has that space now, because he didn't let his fear of Dark Woman overwhelm him. There's a path for him that runs alongside Jaster's, and it's the only one John wants to walk. Not the path of a standard Jedi, maybe, but the right one for him. He's not afraid. Not anymore. That's the gift Jaster gave him, and the sense of that freedom fills John's lungs, burns bright and sweet and impossibly, unendingly comforting. "I'd like to kiss you," he says quietly, and Jaster smiles, warm and soft as he wraps John up in his arms, leans in to close the last slim bit of distance between them. "I can't think of anything that would make me happier, John," he says, and John kisses that sweet smile, warm in the sunshine, with the sense that he's finally found a place to land beating alongside his heart in his chest. The end.
And I'd give up forever to touch you, 'cause I know that you feel me somehow. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever be, and I don't wanna go home right now. And all I could taste is this moment, and all I can breathe is your life. And sooner or later it's over, I just don't wanna miss you tonight. And I don't want the world to see me, 'cause I don't.
Podfigure and note. And with that, we wrap up the main work in progress of my past year, which is really cool because actually when I started this, I had no idea that it would be finishing like a year later. This is right now my longest podfic, and I'm insanely proud of it. It's one of my favorite fics of all time. Thank you to the handful of commenters who've been really great about just sort of like dropping little comments sporadically on chapters as they updated. Thank you to everyone who's listened to this podfic. If you did, I would really appreciate if you let me know just like, I don't know, sometimes people tell me like what they're doing when they listen, which is really fun. They tell me parts that they liked the narration of the best, or even just their favorite parts of the fic. I mean, I'm obviously a big fan, so I like to hear what other people are enjoying. But yeah, if you listened, it would be so cool if you told me even just that you did. Because yeah, I put an insane amount of time into this podfic, like multiple days worth of dedication just to this, and now it's done, and I'm so proud of it. And I hope that if you listened, you enjoyed. Please consider also, if you listened and enjoyed, leaving a comment on the fic itself. You can find that linked in the Inspired By section of the Podfic and in the summary. And Black Cat, the author, just asks that you not leave emoji comments, which I don't mind, but for their mental health, they prefer like actual word comments. So just if you have a favorite moment in this fic or you just really enjoyed it, just maybe consider letting them know. All right. Thank you for listening, and I really do hope you enjoyed.